Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you Tuesday, June 29th, 2021. 13 coming up on 14 minutes past the hour, the last Tuesday in the month of June. 2 days left, and we will be in the month of July. This morning, we're learning a very personal story here in Marion, and we're about to get to the most personal part of it, relating to the pandemic and COVID-19 and what can happen. Joined in studio by Brandy Hobbert, whose father, Patrick, had COVID-19, and I guess that's a good point to start here, and we'll just start late last year. Brandy, it's good to have you in here. Hope the first hour was okay.
Yes, it's been great.
We survived okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell me when this all started last year.
Let's see. I remember he had come to visit me on a Wednesday, and then that following Saturday, I want to say it was around the 15th, because that was his birthday. That was the day he sent me a video, and it was him taking his own temperature, and that he had a slightly raised temperature, which was, you know, very much him. He had a little flair for the dramatics, so he had to take his temperature twice, and he sent it, and I was like, yep, here we go. So
now this would have been November.
Yes, sorry.
November 2020.
Correct.
And he would have been how old?
Well, on the 15th, he turned 57.
57. Now, we should mention that we went over this in the first hour, but if people are just tuning in, no pre-existing conditions.
Nope.
At all.
None.
At all. 57-year-old, still working 40 hours a week.
Yes.
In the health field.
Yes.
You learn the temperature is high. Did he think or did you think at that moment this could be COVID?
I think we probably all did, just because it hadn't hit anybody in our family really yet, and so it was, it seemed like there was a good possibility that was what was happening.
At that point, what sets in? Is there a fear at that point?
For me, no. Actually, to be honest, I teased him a little bit about it over the next couple days, just about, you know, his man cold and not feeling well. I was like, okay, you know, you're kind of milking this. But I mean, that was our relationship. We would joke around with each other, and you know, he knew I was teasing, and he would joke back. So,
at what point was the diagnosis made that's what it was?
So, actually, that day he took his own temperature, my sister, Tiffany, she went and got tested. And so her test came back positive, which at that point we were like, okay, now we're pretty, you know, darn sure that's what it is. But it took, because of the way it worked through Ohio Health, it took him some additional days. Something, I didn't quite understand what was happening, but his test had to be, like, approved through HR or something like that. So it took a few additional days for his test to be scheduled. So I want to say it was, like, the 18th when we found out he was positive.
Working in the healthcare industry, had he stopped working at this point?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, as soon as there was any hint, like, he was done.
At what point did you realize this was problematic, worse than a cold?
So he told me, you know, he wasn't feeling well, his breathing wasn't great, he was going to have a Zoom appointment with the doctor, and it seemed just really fast, because I got a call from Robin saying, "Hey, your dad's, you know, I think he's going to be going to the emergency room." He had actually texted me and he said, I think we're going to have the squad come pick me up. And I was like, my thought was, well, if the squad comes and picks you up, how are you getting home? Because nobody can, and I asked him, like, how are you going to get home? Because I, you know, I couldn't go get him, because then I'd be exposed. And so that was my first thought, like the logistics of it. And his response was, who cares? Because at that point he was just so sick, and having such difficulty breathing, he was ready to go. So Robin called me and said, hey, you know, he's on his way. The squad just picked him up. And I'm like, you know, and I was still pretty flippant about it. That, you know, oh, you know, I know, dad's sick. I was teasing him about, you know, being sick. And she was like, yeah, he probably didn't find that very funny. And I was like, well, he laughed about it. But, you know, she was in the house with him. I wasn't in the house to be able to see. And even, you know, she was in the house with him. And he was such a protector. He didn't want to worry anybody. So I think he did hold back a little bit on how he was truly feeling. Robin's parents, who were living with them at the time, had both also been diagnosed. So they went into the hospital probably the same day Dad should have gone into the hospital, but there was no way he was going to leave Robin by herself worrying about them. So he decided, I think he must have decided he was going to stay and make sure she was okay. But it was that following day, he was finally, you know, he decided he needed to go. But it actually took some work to get him there because, you know, she said he was so weak. He just laid in bed, and he had to have a shower before he went and make sure his hair was done because that was also just part of who he was. But she said on the way out, he tried to keep her away, and she was like, no. And she said, come here and give me a kiss, and she kissed him because she said there was no way I wasn't giving him a kiss on the way out. And he went, but I think the moment that I knew that there was a problem was, it was that next Saturday. I texted him, and I knew he was in the hospital, and I didn't get a response. And I was like, okay, you know, he's resting. I wasn't too worried. And then a couple hours later, I was finally like, you know, hey, you know, I love you. I'm getting a little concerned here. And when he still didn't answer at that point, if he knew that I was worried, he wouldn't let me worry if he could help it. And so then about an hour later, I just sent, I love you. And he finally sent back, I love you. I'm scared. And that was when it really clicked for me, like, later, much later than it should have. I wish it hadn't taken so long, but that was when I was kind of like, this is very serious.
When this protector says, I'm scared, what goes through your mind?
Well, if you're scared, I'm scared.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. I mean, it was, it was pretty, pretty immediate for me. But still, you know, I still had that thought, he's young, he's in the hospital, he's going to be okay.
Prior to that, when he entered the hospital, you knew he had it. What reports were you getting? Because we have to remember, this is COVID time, so you couldn't go visit.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, I would check in with him. He was more updating me on how other people were doing. So, you know, it was, you know, how are Grandma and Chet doing? And, you know, so he would give me the update on them, or, you know, you know, Robin's kind of got a little cough now. At one point they did ask, they had different runners. So I was trying to go, do stuff for them. So the one day I went and got a pulse ox reader so that they could be monitoring, their oxygen levels. And, then another time, he sent me a message, and he's like, man, I really want some McDonald's. So I was like, you know what, sir, if you want McDonald's, I will get you McDonald's. So I went and got him, I think that's probably one of his favorite treats, got him some McDonald's and got Robin a slushy from Speedway. I'm like, I don't, wherever you guys want it from, I will go and do that. So those, you know, just oxygen levels and what the next steps are on, you know, tests and stuff. But nothing like, it was hard to realize being that far away and not seeing it, how serious it was.
We all learned that one of the steps in this is going on a ventilator. Mm-hmm. That is a scary step. When did this happen?
I'm trying to remember the series of events because he went on, obviously he had oxygen starting out, and then they gave him one of the, it was called a vent, but it was some sort of mask that he was wearing. But for some reason, I don't know exactly what was happening, but he had swelling in his neck, something about the way the oxygen, like the high-powered oxygen was going through or something. I'm not a doctor, and don't, you know, don't quote me on any of this exactly, but he had some swelling that was making that really uncomfortable. He was becoming very agitated and anxious, and they were having trouble getting him to keep it on. He was a big, strong guy, so, you know, he was going to fight them on it. And then I know it was definitely before Thanksgiving, a few days before Thanksgiving, that they called and they said, we're going to have to actually put him on a vent. And that was when I had done enough reading and things that I began to mentally adjust to the possibility that he was not coming home.
How does that happen? How do you mentally adjust to that?
So I think with just the way my personality is, while I am an emotional person, I think the logic and reality just kind of took over for me. And it was, my brain was trying to prepare me, so that when it got to be that time, I would be able to, I think it was my brain protecting me a little bit. Like, just get ready. This is a possibility.
When this is going on, what, because being in pandemic time and not being able to visit, how does that change what's going on, that you can't go see him?
It was absolutely wild to just think, like, there is a sick person in my family and I can't walk in there and hold his hand. In a normal time, if the roles had been reversed, Dad was the first one at the hospital, you know, visiting people and being there for people. And I kept thinking, man, I know if I was in the hospital and I was upstairs on a vent, they'd have a tough time keeping him out. Like, how would he do it? What can I do to get in that room? And I know, you know, Robin was having the same issue. And, you know, Tiffany and Sarah, we all wanted to know all the time what is happening. And, you know, I know Robin stated so often, you know, I just know if I could be in there with him and hold his hand, then that anxiety and the agitation, like, I could just get him to be calm. That's a very helpless feeling to think, if only I could be there, the outcome, you know, would have been different. So it was very difficult waiting every day to hear from the nurses and to hear from an, you know, outside person who, they're invested, they're phenomenal people, but that's, you know, that's not their family. It's difficult. It's really, really hard to just be taking someone else's word for what's going on.
What types of things are they saying when they're calling?
Oh, telling stats, basically, you know, here's what we're doing to adjust his oxygen. There's, you know, all kinds of machinery. They're trying their best to explain in a way that we'll understand. Just how they're trying to be calm and kind, but also make us aware that this is very serious. Like I said, the people in the ICU were just, they were phenomenal.
Were you able to have any type of communication with him? Texting, was he still able to do that?
Once he was on the vent, he was sleeping. Like, they had to keep him completely out. But we would send him messages, and they said they were reading him the messages. They got his phone passcode from us so that, you know, if we sent voice messages, they would play those for him. and it was, you know, I was still sending pictures and things because I'm like, well, when he wakes up, he needs to, you know, have these, because there was still that little bit of hope. But that was pretty much the communication that would go through. Robin was wonderful because obviously she was the one getting the calls as his contact person, and she had two phones. So after the first couple where she was trying to relay messages to us and explain what all was going on, you know, with her notes, she was like, I've got to find a different way to do this. So she had two phones and would record the call. So then she would just send it to us. So we were, you know, she did a wonderful job of keeping us all updated, and we were all getting the same information and had the same understanding of what was going on the whole way through.
During this time, what part did social media and being able to write things and say things play?
I think it's therapeutic for sure. I did post, I think you mentioned it earlier, the picture of him, that last picture that was taken, next to the one with him on the vent, which I believe was taken Thanksgiving Day. And that was like the last time he was kind of awake. They turned the medications and things down a little bit, and they wanted to get him sitting up. And they called, and they were so excited that they had gotten him to sit up. He did a FaceTime call with Robin. His eyes were a little bit open. The nurse said, he was trying to smile through the vent. And they thought he was trying to say, I love you, through the vent. So he kind of had an awareness of what was going on. And at that point, Robin, she was like, this is the best Thanksgiving, like, ever. This is the best thing that could have happened. So there was that moment where you're like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe it's going to be okay.
Posting a picture like that of somebody on a ventilator in the public domain, is that hard?
It was hard because Dad was very particular about the way he looked, and his hair especially, and it wasn't the most flattering picture, to be honest. I mean, when anybody's been in the hospital that long and they've got a tube in their throat and they're hooked up to all of those machines, this picture's, you know, scary anyway. And then you add, you know, just the way they look in general, that I knew it wasn't a good picture of him. But I think that was the point, too. Like, here was him, you know, this was him 5 days ago or however long it was, and here he is now. Like, take this seriously, because just because you think that this is you and you are this big, strong, healthy individual, you could still end up like this. So for me, it was getting information out there, kind of combating some of the misinformation that you see constantly where, you know, maybe this, you know, people think this isn't real, or people think that they're impervious to it. So I think while it was uncomfortable posting it, and I knew maybe it wouldn't be his favorite thing to put out on social media, I thought it was important enough that I needed to do it.
When you looked at it, did it say anything to you that this is a guy having a good time at a restaurant and within days in ICU on a ventilator.
It was unbelievable how fast it was. How fast you could go from picture one to picture two. It felt like it was taking forever. I think at the time, like, that it was just, every day was so slow because you're just living for those phone calls waiting for the nurses. But when you really think about it, that's not a long time to go from point A to point B. It was very, very quick. And that was part of how I knew it was so serious as well, because it did seem to go so fast.
The period when he's on the ventilator and you can't have communication, you can't visit, what are the days like? It's the holiday season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like I said, it was just waiting from phone call to phone call, waiting for that next, what the nurse has to say now. Fortunately, you know, I had my kids as a bit of a distraction, so that was good. But there was always this underlying, like, okay, what is going on now? And they were, the hospital was really great about, if there's anything, you know, if you want to call at any time, give us a call, we'll update you. And they did. They did a really nice job with that. You could tell they really understood what the family what the families were experiencing and going through and not being able to be there with their loved one.
When did the moment come that this is really bad?
When they called us and said, why don't you come visit him? They're not letting any family members up. At that point, I knew it was pretty much over. Because nobody's allowed in the hospital right now at all. So if they're telling the family to come in, it's to say goodbye.
When you get that call, what do you think?
So I think, again, I kind of went into logic mode. Okay, what do I need to do now? My task was to go pick Tiffany up. It was early in the morning. And actually, the day we were first called in, it didn't actually end up being the day he passed away. It was a couple days before. But they had something that they wanted to try to do that they knew could be, that could just make his heart, put his heart over the edge. So they wanted to try and turn him over onto his stomach and help take some of the weight off of his lungs so that he could breathe a little bit easier. But they said, if we do this, it's possible he will crash. So we need to know what you want to do. But on the way there, I was, trying to talk to Tiffany. She's only 19, 20 now. trying to remind her that, we're all here, we're together, dad loves us. I think it was trying to keep that, for the most part, I was able to stay in that logical mind space until we actually walked into the room, we're all suited up, and I saw him on the vent, and I just, like, that was when I started hyperventilating, because I'm like, this is my daddy.
This moment, weeks earlier, he's stopping by your house, going to a restaurant. Pictures are pictures, and updates are updates. When you walk into that room,
it was unbelievable. It was, I had seen a video of him, or I had been able to FaceTime. He was out of it, but actually seeing him lying on that big bed, like all hooked up to all the machines. You just feel incredibly helpless, and just knowing that all I could do was be there with him, that I couldn't fix this, and that if the roles were reversed, he would have done anything to fix any of us, and just trying to think, what would Dad do in this situation, and all you can do is be there.
Do you talk to him?
Oh, we talked to him. We sang to him. we were all talking to each other. So it was Robin and my stepsister Sarah and Tiffany. We were all there together and, you know, joking like he would have been. We tried to keep it light, and then there were just those moments where it would hit somebody, and then one person's crying, everybody starts crying. It was very difficult.
When you say you hyperventilated, mm-hmm. it shock.
Absolutely. And it was completely unexpected. It was just, it just hit me very suddenly, like I was okay. And then I took a breath, and I very suddenly was not okay. And I had to just walk away and go sit down, because it was just the idea that, like, I'm not ready for this to be happening. And you have no control over anything. So it was hard to watch.
When was the last time you spoke to him?
That we actually spoke?
Yeah, actually were able to talk.
It was the day he went into the hospital, and I didn't find out until later he was doing this. He was FaceTiming with people. So he FaceTimed me, and he made a joke about how he was, you know, just being a baby about it. And he was like, but seriously, do not get this. Keep yourself and the baby safe. And he made some other phone calls to people. I think he knew that it was possible that this was going to go in a bad direction. On his phone later, we found a video he had made that just said, tell everybody I love them. And so I think he knew how serious it was, but he was trying to protect us from that.
What does that FaceTime mean to you now, as you think back on it?
I wish I could remember every second of it, but it's blurry, unfortunately. That's one of those moments I wish I had known to pay more attention to, but I didn't. I got some text messages after, but it's not the same.
When you went in, you say that day things continued. Mm-hmm. And at this time, there were Facebook. But when you were going home and writing things and posting things, what mode are you in at this point?
I think I had to stay strong for my kids. I knew I couldn't let myself go into just the sorrow and the grief at that point, of just knowing that him passing away was a possibility. I had to keep it together for the kids. And I felt like I wanted to be strong for Robin and Sarah and Tiff, because that's what Dad would have done. He would have been the strong one, and he wasn't there to do that. But there were times when I was by myself that it would hit. I know I was at work, and it really just hit me. And it was back to that hyperventilating. But I think that part of what I was feeling when I was doing those posts was a little bit of anger, that there were still people who just didn't believe that this was real, that there are people who are, you know, putting out misinformation that is having an impact on others' lives.
Do you know how he got it? You talked about how worried he was, mm-hmm. Put the mask on the bobblehead, and was cautious.
Yeah, there's no way for us to know for sure. It could have been from work. It could have been from other, you know, family. It could have been from the restaurant he went to, you know, just a couple of days before. There's no way for us to be able to really trace it back. But it was incredibly unexpected that out of everybody in the household, you know, he was the strongest one. His in-laws, who both got it, were in their 80s. Robin has a lot of health problems. He was the one doing all of the grocery running and, you know, cleaning and things to make sure he was protecting them, knowing that he was the strong one who, if he got it, he's the one who's going to be okay. So let's protect everybody else. And then somehow he was the one who it hit the hardest.
Do doctors, obviously it's COVID, but do they say what is causing the death? Do they say what's happening?
It was on the death certificate that it was sepsis caused by COVID. So his body went septic. He just couldn't handle all the infection and things. And COVID does some incredible things to your body. You know, if you get it, and it really seems like it has to just hit you the right way, because some people, you know, they get it as a gastrointestinal, they start having issues there. Some people have just a mild, you know, almost like a head cold. And then for other people, just the way it manages to latch onto their system, it causes the storm that it caused in Dad.
Tell us as much or as little as you would like about the last day.
You know, there are parts of the last day that I just don't remember. I know we got a call in the morning. I got a call from Robin, and she said, we need to go to the hospital. I think we're going to have to make some decisions. And so we went to the hospital. It all kind of blurs together, because anytime we were there, it was all the same. You know, we're all gowned up and everything. I do remember I wore a sweatshirt. And had I known, like, it, you know, it gets so hot in there. I just remember being so, like, hot. And part of that was just, you know, my physical reaction, I'm sure, to what was happening anyway. I remember standing around the bed. My dad loved to just, like, have his arms tickled. And so we just sat there and tickled his arms, and we talked to him. I walked away for a minute, and Robin came over to check on me. And they had told us, you know, here's the situation. Either we keep him on the vent where he is, and his body is just going to slowly start giving out, because his kidneys were starting to, his heart was starting to. So we had the choice to either keep him on the vent and let it just slowly play out, or we could take him off the vent and he would pass on his own. And when I got a moment away from Tiffany and Sarah, and it was just Robin and I said, I really want the vent out. He wouldn't want to die with that in his throat. So you know, if we got the vent out, then we would be able to, you know, lay in the bed with him, get all those, you know, cords and everything, and we would be able to be closer to him. You know, Tiffany sang to him, and we were all standing around there. She had a really hard time. She, like I said, she was 19, and those years that I had with Dad, where it was, you know, pretty tumultuous, she was in the throes of those years. So they had some good, pretty good arguments and things. And she said, you know, she was so worried that he didn't know that she loved him. But, if, you know, he knew. You know, he knows that people said things that they didn't mean. So we talked to her about that. And she just really wanted to keep the vent in so that he could get better. And I said, Tiffany, that's not the choice we have anymore. Our choice is either Dad dies with a tube in his throat or Dad dies without a tube in his throat. And we need to allow him to pass without the tube in his throat. So we had made that decision. We told them that was our decision. when they came in, you know, Robin said, I need a minute. And so Robin and Sarah and Tiffany all went to take like a restroom break and just take a moment, and I stayed with him. And I held his hand, and there was a song he used to sing to me when I was little that my son and I sing now. And I sat there and I sang to him that song a few times, and I held his hand. I told him how much we loved him. I told him that we were going to be okay, because I knew that would be something that he would worry about. And I told him that I would use his story to help other people, because that was who Dad was. He was a helper. And if his story could impact others and make them see how serious this was, then at least it would have meant something. So that's what I'm trying to do.
What is that moment like? The song is being sung. You're saying goodbye. We're all going to do it at some point, if life plays out as it normally does, to both of our parents in life. What's it like for somebody who hasn't gone through it yet? What would you tell them?
I don't know if I can describe it. It's just unbelievable in that moment that in a few minutes he's just not here anymore. And it's hard to come to terms with that. And in my particular situation, it was knowing the only thing that I can do for him right now is to give him the kind of death he would want, which I believe, based on, you know, knowing who he was and talking to him, that he wouldn't want to be stuck on a ventilator.
Do you think he heard it?
I like to think he heard it. They said he heard it. But I think in that moment, the important thing is I got to say it while he was still breathing.
When the moment comes, what do you do?
Well, I was still in there just talking to him and singing and things, and I was watching the numbers up on the screen, and I realized, like, something's happening. Like, something's not good right now. The numbers are not going the way they should. And all of a sudden, the nurses came in. Robin and Sarah and Tiffany were not back yet. But the nurses came in, and they said, if you want the tube out, we've got to do it now. And so as they were saying that, Robin was coming back in, and she said, no, I'm going to be in here, because they wanted the family out. And she said, I'm going to be here with him. And I'm so glad that she was there with him as that was happening, that she stayed in the room with him while that very scary thing was being done. And then we were all able to come back in the room, and they took the bars on the hospital bed down, and we all just kind of laid on the bed with him while he took his final breaths.
You posted some of these videos on Facebook. What is that like?
I think Tiffany, those were the ones that Tiffany or Robin posted, with the singing and things. And, you know, sometimes I have those days where it's hitting me hard and I just know I need to cry. That's what I go back and look at. If I know, okay, you need to have your moment and move on, like, my moment is to go back and watch those videos or watch our slideshow that we put together, and I can have my good, solid cry, and then I go back and I watch a funny video with him in it, and I'm like, okay, I'm good now. I had that time I needed to have. But it's really, we're very lucky to be able to have those pictures and the videos of us singing, because there are some families who didn't get to go say goodbye. You know, they were stuck on opposite ends of a screen saying goodbye, and I can't imagine that.
How do you remember him?
I remember him as he's our Superman. Like, that's how I remember him. I got a Superman tattoo in his memory. And to me, that just, it reminds me he was so strong and he was so helpful and he could be depended on. And, you know, he had such a great sense of humor. That those are the things that I know I've got those happy memories to go back to.
In those final moments, you're saying, I will use this to help other people. What have you learned? What can you tell the people listening right now? What is the lesson in this?
I think the lesson, I think there are a few. At the time, the lesson was, this is real. This can affect you. I think that's still a lesson. I think people are forgetting we're still in a pandemic. There are so many people without masks. Based on the numbers, I know all of those people are not vaccinated. It's really important to continue to protect yourself and protect other people, because you know, maybe you don't get it, maybe it doesn't affect you, but maybe you take it to somebody who it does affect. And I can't imagine living with the idea of knowing that I had impacted somebody's life and taken you know, taken something from somebody in that way, that, you know, had I just been wearing a mask, or had I just been vaccinated, this person would still be here.
Is there any anger in that way, that when he got it, we are just about 6 months into it, people are aware it's there, but we've got to go back. We've got to go back to work. We've got to do our things. And you can't pinpoint how it happens. You can't even pinpoint where the person who gave it to him got it. Is there anger in that? For instance, people who die in car crashes, people who have those moments where it doesn't have to happen. It's not old age. It's not a stroke. It's not a heart attack. Is there any anger in that?
There's absolutely anger. There was a lot of anger in the month after it had happened, thinking a few things. We were just a few weeks out from when he would have been eligible for the vaccine, because that was, what, mid-December, toward the end of December, and he died December 1st. So there was a lot of frustration there that he just hung on a little bit longer. He would have been okay. But then there was a lot of frustration at the handling of the virus in general, and the misinformation that was out about the virus and about masks, that, you know, what were those things that could have been done that could have changed the trajectory of the virus and the number of deaths we saw, that I think that there were steps that could have been taken that could have at least lessened the numbers and the people affected by this, that unfortunately, it's just not the way it played out. And because of that, my dad's not here anymore.
Do you have any regrets in that period?
For the period when...
Let's say the beginning of November through December 1st, that month of your life.
I wish that I had taken it more seriously when he first got sick, because I was one of those people who thought it's not going to affect him seriously. There was no reason for it to. And had I taken it more seriously, there were things that I would have said that I know he knew, but that I wish that I would have just been able to say to him while he was awake.
you're doing this now. It is brave. Telling a personal story is very brave in a public forum. I certainly thank you for this, and I know the audience thanks you. With 2 minutes left, if he were here right now, and maybe he is, what would you say to him?
I would say that I miss him, obviously. That his grandkids and his family miss him incredibly. But that we know how he tried forever to protect us. And I will just note that nobody else in the family, even if they got it, did not get it seriously. And I'd like to think that somehow he had a part in that.
And you have gotten vaccinated.
I have gotten vaccinated.
With about a minute left, what is your feeling on those numbers being below 50% in this state right now?
I think we need them to be higher. I am not one to tell anybody what they should or should not put in their body. I understand the hesitation some people have. But if you're not getting vaccinated because you think you're safe from it, you're not necessarily. You don't know how it will affect you. So if you have any, if you're just not getting the vaccine because you think you're safe, just go get it. Just because it is safer to do that.
Is this something you think you ever get over? Is there ever closure?
No. No, I think day by day it changes how you feel, and every day is a little bit different. But I don't think you ever get over losing somebody. No.
Brandy, I really can't thank you enough. We talked about this at the time. I'm so glad you came in, because I do think we hear a lot of statistics. We hear from a lot of professional people, doctors, politicians about this. But I think this is all reality. This is true. This is Marion, Ohio. This is the way it happened. Mm-hmm. And people can do with it what they would like to do, but you've told your story. And I really, 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 really do appreciate that. I want you to know that.
Well, thank you for having me.
And you did a great job.
Thank you.
We are going to wrap things up today, and stay tuned for more here on WWGH Radio. Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
And thank goodness, because you're one of a kind.
Oh, there's two Marlas.
Oh, there's another Marla.
Yeah, Danny's daughter. No, that's Marlo.
Oh, that's right, Marlo.
They keep calling me Marlo sometimes. I say, no, that's Marlo Thomas. I said, Marlo has the money, and Marla is after it.
Do you regret not getting as many award Emmys, things like that? Does that ever factor in?
No, because I say the work is its own reward. You can't decide who's going to give you an award. But if you're doing the work, as long as you appreciate it for the work, I think that's the best. The awards are nice. I mean, it'd be nice if I got one. But I was up 4 times, so I was a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Marla, when you get a role today, you say you still do auditions. Does the money matter?
Yes, it does. Because I blew all my mind when I blew it.